Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Ethics Talk. My name is Hope May, and I'm joined tonight by Jeff Lambert.
Hello, everybody.
And Erica Maley.
Hi.
So I'm really excited about tonight's show, which is on Leo Tolstoy's Why Men Stupefy Themselves. This is a shorter essay by Tolstoy, and we encourage you to read it, of course, not now, but perhaps after the show. You can access it on our show resources page at ethicstalk.c, that's the letter C, M-I-C-H, C-Mish, dot E-D-U. So basically the main conclusion of this essay is that Tolstoy thinks that we should practice complete, that is 100%, absolute abstinence regarding both alcohol and tobacco. And we're going to be focused just on alcohol tonight, just for the sake of focus and clarity. And so complete abstinence, not a glass of wine at dinner or an occasional beer, no, none of it. So the question is, why is he such a Debbie Downer? Why have this view? And we're going to be talking about that tonight. That is the objective, to look at Tolstoy's reason for why one should practice total abstinence regarding alcohol and whether or not his argument holds any water. To start us off, I thought we could all just do something anecdotal and somewhat fun, which is to go around the tables, as it were, and talk about the last time we drank and why we drank. And I will start out saying the last time I remember drinking, note the I remember part, was, I believe, back in The Hague, which was about 2 months ago. And it was in the context of going to dinner with my husband and a colleague from the International Criminal Court. And often when I go out to dinner with people, I will have a drink. In The Hague, I was drinking white wine, not because I'm a huge fan of it, but because I do Weight Watchers, and white wine has the fewest points. Red wine has 3 points, white wine has 2. Hence, that's why I was drinking white wine. And that was the last time I drank, and, you know, and just thinking about it, I thought it came to me, just for the sake of this show, engaging in this exercise, when was the last time I drank and why? I thought, you know, it's really silly for me to drink on these occasions because I do so for the purpose of, you know, relaxing and being able to have, you know, a more comfortable time with a bunch of people. I don't really like hanging out with a lot of people. I'm a little bit uncomfortable in social situations, so it sort of eases the pain. But on reflection, it's a false belief because, in fact, after I have imbibed a drink or two and reflect on the evening, say the day after, I feel very self-conscious and I think, oh, did I say too much or was I too drunk? And especially when I'm at a dinner with professional people. So I guess the pleasure isn't worth the pain thereafter on reflection. So that is when the last time I drank was. And Jeff, what about you?
Actually, I just got back from Boston last night, and the last time I drank was with my dad. We went out to the bar, and we had some delicious seafood, as well as some of the local microbrews and the Sam Adams Brewery. And honestly, the reason that we did it is we were excited to try a new beer, and we both were just in it for the taste, and obviously we had a lot of fun, and at the bar scene, everyone was there. We got talking to a lot of people, and everyone was drinking, and they were all talking about how their beers are better out in Boston, and it was a lot of fun, and the beer did taste very, very good. So that was my last time around alcohol. And also we went to a few football games, and we had a few beers there, too. So mine was actually very recent.
Can I just ask if the beer in Boston is better or worse than the beer in Holland?
I would have to say that the beer that I enjoyed the most was in Boston.
Huh.
But overall, I think that the beer was better in Holland.
I see. Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
What a political answer of you.
All right, Erica, what about you?
Well, my situation is a little different from most in that I don't really drink. And so when I'm around alcohol, it's with other people that are drinking it usually. And so usually I get a lot of questions, well, why don't you drink? And my answer is always that I'm just having a good time, enjoying myself with my friends without drinking. And so I don't really feel the need to bring that into the mix.
Mm-hmm. So, excellent. I also want to engage in just a short conversation about the more general question. We were just asking the question, why did we drink just this last time? But more generally, and Jeff, I'll start with you. Like, why is the reason people drink? I mean, you're mentioning the taste of beer.
Yeah, I have a short list here. Taste is number one on it because that's the reason I drank last. But I also have times of celebration, specifically one of my really good friends, his brother just proposed over the weekend, and they're getting married, so they went out to celebrate.
Wow. Congratulations.
And, yeah, Jack Showalter, congratulations to the Showalter family if you're listening. also, I have down to socialize in social events, especially, well, connected to that is the social expectation being at college. It's almost like Erica was saying, if she's at a party and not drinking, it's expected that you are. So it's like, wait, why aren't you drinking again?
Mm.
And it's funny, she has a phenomenal reason to abstain from drinking, and it's completely not the case. It's usually it's the exact opposite. There's also for courage, like Hope was saying, when you find yourself in a situation where you're not the most comfortable after you've had a drink or two, all of a sudden you get a little more courage, and it seems like you're a little more brave. And then also there's cultural expectations, especially. When in my experiences in Europe, there's always a particular alcohol to accompany food. For instance, certain wines go with certain foods, certain beers are like the Sam Adams. They have certain beers to go along with certain meals. So it's like a cultural food culture thing. And then lastly, that's connected to Tolstoy's piece is to forget things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good way to get into the meat of the argument. And that, to me, other than the social expectation in college, because not only are you expected to drink, but you're expected to drink a lot. But this thing of forgetting, you know, you've had a bad day, you come home, everyone's like, oh, you're in a bad mood, well, here, have a beer. And then it's kind of like your escape. So I think that that's the social expectation and the forgetting the most troublesome on the list. But that's those are the reasons I thought that. People are expected to drink or do drink.
Excellent. Do you want to add anything, Erica?
No, I think he did a pretty good job, but I think like the biggest one, especially for college, is social. And people, even if you, I mean, like after a while, I can see someone being tempted just to be a part of it. And, I mean, I know as someone who is most of the time is on the outside watching other people drink and stuff that, like, yeah, I mean, sometimes you want to be in the inner circle and, like, understand what that dynamic is with it. But I've found creative ways around that, such as bringing Crystal Light in a water bottle so people think that you're drinking.
Funny.
So, yeah, people are like, oh, what you got there? I'm like, something special. They're like, what's in it? I'm like, I can't tell you. It's a water and lemonade. But yeah, it's definitely a social thing and something that people want to be a part of, and so I think that's why they're tempted to drink.
Right. So let's just get right into the meat of it, which as Jeff said, you know, as we said, the Tolstoy urges complete and utter abstinence. No way, no how, never, never, never do it. And to understand why he says that, it helps to be mindful of the reasons why he thinks people drink. And he does. I mean, there's this one sentence that I pulled. Men drink not to keep their spirits up, not for gaiety's sake, not because it's pleasant, but in order to stifle conscience in themselves. So Tolstoy is totally aware that people drink for pleasure and celebration and keep their spirits up, but he rejects the idea that this is the reason why people do it. One has to look deeper, and it's to, quote, stifle conscience in ourselves. And as Jeff was saying, there's this idea of forgetting. And what's very interesting about Tolstoy's writing here is this forgetting. When we think of forgetting, we think about a memory that's already there, and we just don't want to pay attention to it. So Tolstoy says, look, there are times when we've done terrible things, and we will go for alcohol just to forget the awful things that we've done. But he also says that before we're about to do something awful, we'll drink so that we can carry through with a deed that we know is bad. So there's this sort of preparatory work that the alcohol sort of, you know, greases the rails, as it were. So it's both before a deed that you don't feel good about and after a deed that you don't feel good about. And I'm wondering, just to throw this out there to you guys, when we think about this claim that Tolstoy makes, this effect that alcohol has on just, you know, to use the phrase again, greasing the rails, right? Perhaps that explains why it is so ubiquitous in college. Because isn't it the case that in college, well, I'll just leave it at that. You're nodding, so
yeah.
You want to go on?
That's actually what I had as my favorite passage, is that men know the power of wine in drowning out the voice of conscience and deliberately employ it with that end in view. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's, I thought of college life, absolutely, mm-hmm. because not only is there that social expectation that we were talking about, but it almost seems like, well, in college you're out there and you're trying to meet people, and a lot of the times, you know, you're trying to hook up or do things like that that normally you would feel awkward in doing, or if you were sober, it would almost be looked down upon. Hmm. But people know that you can fall back on the excuse like, oh, I was just drunk, that wasn't me. That's not the real me. It was just the booze or whatever. But when I was thinking and, you know, working this out in my head, it's so true that you deliberately do that. You put yourself in a position where you can use that as an excuse. So you go to a party, and a lot of times you know you go out there, and to have a good time means you meet a girl or you get in some sort of fight, which seems to be the only two ends that I've witnessed with a lot of guys that go out. It's either you're flirting with girls or you're fighting. So, but like in a sober environment, like usually that doesn't happen. I mean, maybe to a lesser degree, but it just seems like there's so many real life examples running through my head right now. But yeah, it's just like, they're definitely just doing it to fall back on that excuse and to do things that they normally wouldn't do, and, you know, to do like the crazy things. And
huh. it's so funny because when I posed this question, I was not thinking of the social aspect of college.
Hmm. Oh, I'm thinking of like probably what you're thinking of.
Okay, what are you thinking
of?
Well,
I'm thinking of like, all right, so it's Friday night or Thursday night, whatever it is for students, and they're like, I made it through another week. Let's go party. Let's have some fun. I'm sick of my homework. I'm putting this on the back burner till Sunday afternoon. Let's have some fun. And so everybody wants to go out, and that's why they drink, because they're – and people will say when they're out, oh, yeah, I have this huge project due, whatever, but it's the weekend and stuff. And so – and then – Sunday or Saturday night comes around and it's like, oh, I have so much homework tomorrow. Let's have one last hurrah and go out and have fun again. So I think that plays into it too.
Yeah, that's definitely what I was thinking of. You are correct. So we actually have a caller on the line, and I'm going to take that call.
Okay.
And then we'll come back to this point. Caller, are you there?
I still am here.
Oh, hello, caller. Is this Jeff?
Yes, Hope, this is Jeff, as usual. I'm the Jeff away, but I thought it'd be worthwhile of just when you start talking about alcohol, and you have to deal with alcohol as a food, because it does contain calories, as you mentioned, and I mean, an average drink has about the same calorie content as a large potato, but unlike potato, it has and other foods, it has absolutely no nutritional value. In essence, the calories are empty.
Hmm.
But alcohol has a perverse as well as an extensive effect on the whole body system, and it really affects the CPU the most, that is the brain. And the chemical effects of alcohol on the brain are widespread and actually quite detrimental. And some people were talking about, well, alcohol affects our ability to be a little bit more social. Well, it does. It changes your control of judgment. And it does by inflicting disruptions in what we call the neural transmitter systems of the brain. And there are many, many, many systems in the brain that regulate body functions, from the lungs to the heart to the liver, but mostly in the brain in terms of its ability to function normally. And alcohol is a substance that creates dependency or an addiction. And the addiction comes from the continued use of the substance that has no beneficial value. And at the same time, each time you want to get the same good feeling out of alcohol or another drug. And that's called tolerance. But the problem is once you get tolerance up high enough to get the same feeling each time, you then go through what's called withdrawal, which is the painful part. It's the shakes, the cold sweats, it's the tremors, it's the inability to sleep. It really disrupts the brain. But some of the things is you see in the brain is actually can be fatal. That is, if you over imbibe in any alcohol, you actually can put the physiological system a fatality. That is, it shuts down the capacity of the medulla, or part of the brain, which is sort of the master gland of the brain, to control autonomic body functions, that is, heartbeat and breathing. And I think we've heard what happens in some of the college cases of people over imbibing and actually detoxify themselves by shutting down their normal biological, physiological systems with alcohol. Some of it is the inhibitory effects of, say, GABA, which is it makes somebody feel kind of sluggish and easy. Alcohol is not a stimulant by any effect. Alcohol is a depressant. Alcohol also weakens the neurotransmitter glutamine, and I don't want to get too much, which even enhances the sluggishness of the person that's imbibing. So if one looks at the brain, and there's many parts of the brain, and I don't want this to be a neuroanatomy class tonight, but, I mean, it's the limbic system, it's the cerebellum and memory, it's the pituitary gland,
medulla,
which I've already mentioned, and it has pretty vast effects on it in terms of, you know, leading to potentially poor judgment. Depresses inhibition. I've heard you guys just talk about it.
Yeah, can I just interrupt?
Talkative and more calm.
Hello. Earth to
yeah.
Death.
Blunts the senses, increases the threshold for pain. Many
all right,
people
I'm barreling
drink.
In there. I am barreling in. Stop. You mentioned memory a minute ago. I mean, you mentioned a lot.
Yes.
And before we passed you in to the line, and there is another caller on the line, and caller, we will get to you in just a second. You mentioned the effect on memory, and I just want to connect that because what we were talking about before, and Tolstoy makes this point that alcohol has this effect on our memory where we sort of forget about bad things, and that's why we do it. And I was wondering if you could just briefly touch on how exactly alcohol affects the memory and the systems in the brain associated with memory.
Okay, without getting into a lot of the neurophysiology, there is memory loss associated with alcohol consumption both on moderate and on extreme basis. Some of it's directly related to the physiological effect by cutting down the ability of the body to use oxygen. Well, the part of the body that needs oxygen the most is the brain. And so what it does is starts affecting the brain in terms of both short and long-term memory as well as cognitive ability to think. Right?
That's good.
So that's,
I think that's
one of them.
Okay. And what else?
I mean, so that's the limbic system, okay? And there's a parts of the brain. And so that part, when you inhibit it, without going through all the chemical processes that go on, controls memory and emotions. And that the person who is imbibing in alcohol will experience significant memory loss and may have even exaggerated states of emotion. If it affects the brainstem, the medulla, it controls body functions that automatically go without us knowing about it, your breathing, your temperature, your heart rate. And if you overdo it, the medulla just shuts down these systems and it winds up being fatal. It affects the liver. I mean, there isn't an organ system in the body that's not affected by alcohol, and I think Tolstoy goes to this, is that it the one that's most affected is the brain and the central nervous system, which really controls the whole body. I mean, alcohol is, in some ways, depresses nerve cells in the brain, dulling them, altering them, and damaging the ability to respond appropriately. So it causes sleep, anesthesia, respiratory failure, coma, and finally death. It impairs and distorts visual ability and hearing. I mean, it's not, when you read the textbooks on addiction and you read what alcohol and other drugs do, there is no benefit. And I can see where Tolstoy says abstinence is the best. I have to say I'm abstinent, 100%. I'm like Eric. I mean, I can have just as much fun with alcohol as I can without it.
To wit.
Okay. It creates chronic inflammation in the liver. If you have a chronic inflammation point, it ultimately destroys the liver, and that's called cirrhosis.
Yeah, and I just want to say we got to wrap it up because we have another caller. But what you're going into with the effect on the liver, is beyond what Tolstoy is talking about. Because sum up,
you have to understand that just alcohol does not just stupefy the brain.
Well,
it goes past the brain. And
I think
Tolstoy
is sufficient to understand that it stupefies the brain. But they don't need to even you don't even have to bring in the liver, you know, as if you need something else. I think it's enough for him. And Jeff Lambert has a question. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering if a person who engages in drinking occasionally, let's say 1 to 3 times a week, a few drinks,
is this a personal consultation?
Maybe, perhaps, or those involved around me.
He's asking for a friend.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if...
another one of those friend questions. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there is no free ride with alcohol, no matter what.
Okay, so
you can have one beer or one glass
damage.
Of wine or one...
This is Tolstoy's point.
Right. Okay.
I mean, there is not free of harm.
Okay.
And you have to understand one thing about the brain is that when you destroy cells in the brain, they do not come back.
Well, I don't think that's true
like
anymore.
A carcinogen, there is no safe level.
There are some studies showing, neuroplasticity. But anyway, we need to bring in our neuroscientists to have this conversation. Okay,
so
well...
If it affects the brain, it affects the rest of the body.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Dr. Wiegand, for shedding light
on... Thank
you,
Dr. May. I'll have a drink ready to come home.
There's another caller on the line, so perhaps they have a question for you. If you want to stay on and take the question, great. If
sure.
you need to go, that's fine. But other caller, I'm going to patch you in. Caller, are you there?
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Lovely, thanks. How are you?
Good. Is this Michael Klagstad?
No last names on the air. What are you doing?
I'll bleep that out. I'm sorry. Do you have a question for Dr. Wiegand or anybody here?
I don't know that I can follow Dr. Wiegand with anything, but, you know, I don't know that I want to discuss brain states and whatnot. But I have a proposition. I don't know if I'm going to sidetrack you too much. If you're willing to entertain it, I'll table it for you.
Shoot.
Who's it for?
I guess for the group as a whole. Sorry, Dr. Wiegand, you're too smart for me. So I hear you guys talking about alcohol as like an excuse or as a social lubricant or as like a Dionysian celebrant. I think those are all very valid analyses of why a college student would want to imbibe. But I just want to propose a hierarchical step up from that, and it's that perhaps we drink not for one of those particular reasons, but to be something different, to alter our own identity. To explain what I mean, let me give you a short anecdote. I have this friend, his name is Dave, and I'm just going to use his real name because I'm sure he's not listening. But he's one of those people. He's one of those people that you see only on television shows who has no emotional outward appearance. He's just a complete stoic. And sometimes I think that it's even more than that. Like, he's incapable of feeling emotion. At the very least, he can't show it outwardly. What happened from time to time is Dave will call me up and say, "Hey, Mike, there's this big event in my life, and I'm not sure how I feel about it." And I'll say, "Okay, Dave, what do you want from me?" And he'll say, "Well, I think we need to get drunk." He's like, "Okay." So long story short, Dave, you could tell him that his dog just got ran over, and he would just give you a big stare. But after a few drinks, he starts talking about his feelings, and he starts giving people hugs. I mean, it just gets awkward, right? We've all seen this before. Well, it's not as though he's a sloppy drunk or anything like that. It's just that he's completely disconnected from his emotions. I don't know if it's some kind of conditioning that his parents put him through, if it's just weird genetics, but his standard identity is one such that he cannot deal well with emotion. So in order to access those emotions, which he normally can't do, from time to time, he will get intoxicated with, you know, close personal friends so that he can table those kinds of things in his mind. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
oh, yeah.
I think that's not entirely inconsistent with
eminent physiological sense. I mean, the alcohol is actually affecting two critical systems in the brain, two neurotransmitters. One is GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid, which is an inhibitory transmitter, neurotransmitter. And it's fortified or enhanced by another one called glutamine. These are very simple chemical compounds, which it also enhances the ability for people to sort of come out of their shell. So what he is doing is actually trying to use or is using a drug to create an atmosphere by which he can release something. But it's artifactual. It's induced by a drug, which is basically changing his brain neurochemistry.
Well, you lost me at physiological. Let me see if
should I spell it for you?
No, I think I'm good. I think what you're saying, and I think this was kind of my point, is that he's using it to somehow change his brain state into, or enhance it or alter it into something that he can deal with or work with.
Yeah.
And I think that's
Out of the
point. There you have
it.
He does, yeah.
Can he do it without the drug?
Of course
not
he
really,
can.
No.
Oh.
You've never met
him. Send him up our way.
Yeah.
I mean, I to me what it sounds like is happening, and perhaps, Jeff, you can connect this with those neurotransmitters that you're talking about, because you mentioned the word inhibition. And it just sounds like your friend's critic is, like, really loud in his head. Like, I mean, and it's just normal. Like, he just, his default setting is one of inhibition, great inhibition. And what he's doing, and I don't know if this is, am I misunderstanding how GABA and these other neurotransmitters work, Jeff?
No, I don't think, I think one of the things that happens with the, and I'm just picking, I mean, there are many, 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 like serotonin, dopamine, epinephrine. I mean, I just go through, there's a litany of neurotransmitters. But what happens with, when you have alcohol use or other drugs, the effect of alcohol on the brain is a learned behavioral syndrome. When a behavior is learned under the influence of alcohol, the drinker must and always returns and relearn the behavior after stopping drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So what he is has a learned behavior associated with drinking.
And I would say to Mike's characterization of this usage of alcohol, which is to become someone else, I would say, as they say, take the long view, because in fact, who your friend really is the guy, like, who he has become is the guy who drinks to be emotional. Like, that is who he is. It's not like this episodic thing of, okay, I'm becoming someone else. No, the whole person who he is the guy who must drink to be emotional. That's who he's becoming and is, I would say. Sorry.
I mean, it's a...
Debbie Downer here again.
The
all right, guys, well, 30 minutes left, and we got to get into Tolstoy and either come to accept what he's saying or reject it or what. So if you want to stay on the line as we address Tolstoy's actual arguments, we're sort of dancing around them. But what we've done so far is talk about the different reasons why people engage in drinking, and Dr. Wigand, also known as Jeff, has been gracious enough to explain some of the physiological effects, getting down to the biochemical nitty-gritty of it all. And it's not very pretty. But
just want to add
now,
one more thing. I mean, and
sure.
This is a gender difference. If we were to look at equal weights of male and female, muscle mass has more oxygen capacity than fat. And if you have... That means you have 10% more water in your body if you have more muscle than fat. So if a lean man and a lean woman of equal weight consume the same amount of liquor or alcohol, the woman is more adversely affected, not only for this, but from other reasons of endocrine reasons. So women are more susceptible to this altering of the brain neurochemistry than men are, actually.
Wow.
Well, I'll leave you with that thought. You can take and apply gender balance to Tolstoy.
Well, I actually think he entitles the piece "Why Men Stupefy Themselves," so maybe he was mindful of this distinction. Probably not. No, he actually talks about prostitutes in the essay, and he makes the claim that prostitutes just drink all the time because they know what they're doing is awful, and this is this effect. They're drinking to drown out their low self-esteem. And, yes. And so that's why I wanted you to talk about, you know, this forgetting aspect of alcohol use, and you know, because this is really one thing that Tolstoy seizes on, and this is sort of the main reason why we do it, to forget. And so...
Yeah, people in pain drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. You can have psychological pain, you can have physiological pain.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol suppresses pain.
Absolutely, and what's so interesting about Tolstoy is that when he's talking, and he does mention this in context of tobacco, but I think it holds for alcohol as well, where Tolstoy talks about why he used to smoke, and he reflects on the fact that he would light up when he was working and about to work, and there's a line in the essay where he says something like, intellectual work is necessarily painful. Like, there's no way to get around the fact that intellectual work is painful, and that it's this instinct that we have to shun away from the pain and then just get away from it. And we do that through smoking, drinking, doing something else, distracting ourselves from the real labor that's required for intellectual work. But in fact, according to Tolstoy, like, that is what we should be doing, because that is our task as human beings, is to engage in this work, as he calls it, of the conscience, which is intellectual. So I just wanted to make that point that Tolstoy definitely is mindful of pain and also mentions intellectual pain as really, really bad. I think at one point he actually says it's worse than physical labor. The pain associated with intellectual labor is actually worse.
To this conversation, I'm going to let you guys continue on dissecting Tolstoy and getting comments from your friend's friend.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have you on the show. And
thanks
for clearing some things up for us. Bye.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
All right. So let's just get into Tolstoy. A more narrow approach to alcohol than the approach that we've been taking for the first half hour. And to just rein this in a bit, let's make a distinction between Tolstoy thinks that alcohol has just very harmful effects, and what Dr. Wigand was talking about was the harmful effects that it has on the individual in terms of destroying your liver, eroding your memory, right? There's no benefit whatsoever to it, empty calories. But in addition, and this goes back to our conversation that we were having about this norm that we see in college and of alcohol use, with the fact that there's this social aspect that you were talking about, Jeff, and then there's also this other aspect of work, intellectual labor, which is characteristic of college. And this idea of forgetting is extremely important to Tolstoy's reasons as to why alcohol is dangerous. And on page 149, I love this passage, this theme of silencing the inner critic, and this goes back to Mike's friend's example of, I'm imagining Mike's friend as being someone who has a very, very loud critic in his head at all the time, and it's just so normal. Like, that voice has always been there, and it's like, don't show any emotion whatsoever. It's wimpy or whatever it is. And it just feels normal. And so when you drink alcohol, you silence this inhibition, this inhibitory voice in your head. And just before I move on, do you guys want to add to that or comment on this point that Tolstoy makes about alcohol having this silencing effect on this sort of inner voice within us?
Yeah, that's what I think I was getting at when I said that when you go out and you're drinking, you do things, and then you use alcohol as an excuse. I think that using alcohol as an excuse is exactly doing that, silencing your critic. You know, there's the things that you would do as a sober individual, you would talk yourself out of it, like, this isn't cool, it's not the right thing to do. But then when you lean on the alcohol and you're like, oh, well, since I'm drunk, it's okay now. Or just that phenomenon seems to happen on a daily basis in college. So that's exactly what I was getting at when I was talking earlier in the show.
And, yeah, I think that's why when you're in situations like that, it's, like, so dramatic, too. It, like, turns into a soap opera because people, like, act in ways that they wouldn't usually act and say things that they wouldn't usually say, and it makes everything more, like, I would say intense and everything, because people change who they are. So, and the alcohol allows them to do that, I think.
Yeah, and also related to what Hope and Erica were saying about, oh, well, it's the weekend, so I don't have to work, so let's go out and drink. I think also part of that critic would normally be telling them, hey, you have responsibilities to do, you better be doing them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you drink and you're like, okay, well, now I just forgot about those responsibilities, so now it's easier to not do them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And there's this passage that I'm looking at, which is on page 149 at the bottom, and Tolstoy says, the chief work which moves the whole life of man proceeds not in the motion of arms and legs, the physical powers, but in the consciousness. So it's like our work is dealing with this thing, consciousness, and in order for a man to accomplish something with his arms and legs, he must first undergo a certain change in his consciousness. So to do something with your body, you know, to do something that's an accomplishment, there's this inner work that has to go on. And what you're doing when you're drinking is you're silencing this thing, like the source of the voice, which pertains to your work as a human being. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to connect this piece with the piece that we were talking about last week when we were talking about international tools. And we alluded to another of Tolstoy's essay called Bethink Yourselves. And I read some passages from that where Tolstoy says things like, you know, before you go into battle or you're asked to do these things, before you undertake any action, any man should ask himself something like, who am I? What am I here for? What has the higher power sent me in here to do? And so on and so forth. And last week we were talking about the importance of these questions, and that for Tolstoy, these are the most important questions you should be asking. And after the show, we were talking about how these questions are seldom asked, and they're so, so important. And if people, Tolstoy claims, if people ask them, the bad stuff that we see would not happen as much. And I just want to say that, you know, this is what he's getting at, like this voice, which is the source of these questions, who am I, what is my destiny? Like, that's the thing that's being silenced with alcohol. And, like, that's not the thing to be silencing, because that's really who you are and the whole purpose of your life. So why would you ever do anything which throws a rug on that or what have you. It just makes no sense for him. And I think that's a totally different way of looking at this action of drinking alcohol. And I want to make the point that, you know, Tolstoy is assuming this whole view of human nature and mind. And at one point in the beginning of the essay, he says, you know, there's like two sides to a human being. This is on page 143. During the period of conscious life, a man can frequently detect in himself two separate beings, one blind physical and the other gifted with sight spiritual. The blind animal being eats, drinks, rests, sleeps, propagates, and moves about like a machine wound up. The seeing spiritual being connected with the animal itself does nothing but only estimates the activity, blah, blah, blah. And so what he's saying is when you drink, what you're doing is you're, you know, covering up this, quote, seeing spiritual being, which is really who you are and what your destiny consists in, and that's why you shouldn't do it at all. And it's hard enough for that thing to manifest itself fully in your consciousness. It takes, as Tolstoy says, intellectual labor, and you need every waking moment to have it present itself and live in your life as much as possible. Okay, I'm done. Anybody want to add to that?
That was well said.
yeah, well, I had a drink before and that's helping. I'm kidding. No, that's what we did in the 2010 series. Kidding again. So there's this clarity of mind, and even if it's just one drink, really, and indeed, really, because of the reasons why we're saying. So does that seem right to you guys that, I mean, is this, I want to say, does it ring true to you? Does it resonate that this, first of all, this point about there's two aspects of a human being, sort of slavish, animalistic self, and then there's like this higher being, and there are these two sort of sides of every person. Do you guys agree with that much? Is that your experience with your own consciousnesses?
Absolutely, and this is also something that I've discussed when studying Aristotle and things of that nature, how Aristotle says that there are these animalistic things that you do, and the reason that we're humans is that we can control those, and in fact you should, and that's a whole other thing. But yeah, I think there are definitely two sides. There's this animalistic thing or part of us that that we need to exercise control over, and that may get in the way. But Erica, if you have anything else to say about that, I also have some challenges after that to Tolstoy's view.
Well, just to make sure that I'm understanding this right, it's saying that the like higher being of you is like silenced or muted when you're drinking, right? And you return back to this like animalistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to, just before we go on, just for the sake of our listeners, and there's another caller on the line, and we'll get to you after Erica finishes this thought, but remember Dr. Wiegand's bit about the effect on the memory.
Okay, anyway. Okay, yeah.
To you.
But I think I definitely agree with this idea, just because when you're at these functions where there is a lot of alcohol, and I think I've expressed this to Hope before, it's hard to really find like a meaningful like conversation or like a fulfilling friendship in these scenarios, because it's just people going through, I feel like, these animalistic habits, and it's not like you connecting with them on like their higher being. So
wow, you just have the wrong drinking partners. I'll introduce you to some people. I've had many wonderful conversations over white wine. So I think it has to do with the company you keep. But yeah, I think that someone's tolerance for that type of high-level intellectual conversation is perhaps mitigated by drinking alcohol. But I definitely have memories of philosophical conversations over alcohol. On that note, I'm going to take the call. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Excellent.
Can you hear me?
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good.
I'm just basically, jumping into the conversation here.
Excellent.
And, as you were discussing a point, I found myself, involved in a thought about it, and you kind of followed through to the same point, and I just thought I would throw a twist in on, the inner voice and silencing the inner voice and the idea that there are sort of these two voices, perhaps, or two sources. And it just seems to me that you know, to put it briefly, the voice that we ordinarily hear in our head, basically, if you think about it, like all day long, pretty much your entire waking, you know, experience involves like a narration of your thoughts in your head as you go about the day. And I think that that voice, you know, that we identify as ourselves is really just like a blind, mechanical, involuntary function of habit. And we think of it as ourselves just because it sounds like our voice. It's like a masked, you know, when someone's like interviewed on television and they want their identity concealed so that the voice is shifted. It's like that in our head. It's like a blind, you know, it's a blind, unknowing, mechanical habit repetition that just like masked and stole your speaking voice that you hear when you talk out loud.
Huh.
Because of that,
that's ringing true to me.
Yeah, you think you're doing that thinking, but if you pay careful attention, I mean, maybe you're not, and it's a lot more involuntary than you think, because if you try to stop talking to yourself, you find, obviously, and I think it's a common, whatever, observation, that it's very hard or almost impossible for most people not to continuously talk to themselves. So it's like an involuntary function. And I think that that other voice that you hear, you know, in special moments of experience is like, yeah, something different. And so what I had thought, you know, in connection with all of this is that maybe when people drink, they feel like more free and so forth. And as if it's that other source, that like a free sort of experience or what have you, it's just because they made the machine like not function right. And so it feels less mechanical and rigid because it's like wobbling around and you're thinking things that, you know, are kind of weird or what have you. And it's like a way to, it's like a surrogate or substitution to experience like that voice that's really free and illuminated and that's not just mechanical. So it's like a substitute for a thing that people like don't know how to get to the real one. So they just try to work the machine. With alcohol. Anyway, that was my thought.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, actually, there's another caller on the line, so let me add them to the mix. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Hi, this is Joe calling.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
Good. Do you have a comment on stupidification?
Yes, I do.
All right.
The little voice that people hear in their head, the kind of, you know, running commentary that you're talking about, there's been a lot of interesting research, and what they've found in the past few years, it's in the brain there's something called the default mode network. What that is they found that when we are resting, daydreaming, sleeping even, the brain is very active, and it is doing a lot. People didn't really believe it, but they've found evidence now that suggests that that's exactly what it's doing. We, in essence, are pre-planning a lot of our thoughts out, and then we execute them, you know, when we don't have time to think about things. And I think that drinking has affected that. They say that, you know, it's about retrieving memories. It's about envisioning the future. You know, any complex task, there's a lot more pre-planning. So I don't know that I buy into the, you know, animalistic, just kind of, you know, you're just a machine running through the cogs. And, I don't think we even understand how alcohol affects this system, because everything in the brain is interconnected.
Does anybody want to comment on Joe's point? Mike?
That was cool.
And I will add one more thing, is that any new information, this is not universally accepted. It's not something that, you know, everybody buys into. It needs to be challenged. And, you know, the way that they do that is by, after years and years of successfully, you know, warding off these challenges, then we will say, yes, there is such a thing as a, you know, default state network or default mode network in the brain, and it's a real thing. So, but at this point, it looks like the brain is doing a lot more than we ever expected, and it's doing things like not just when you're, you know, active moving muscles or when I'm talking right now, it's, you know, your ideas and these conversations that we're having have their origins way back in time. So it's very interesting. But
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Please.
I'm just curious because I like, you know, your point, and it sounds really interesting. But at one point you said, therefore, kind of, I thought, you don't buy into the idea that there's, like, it's mechanical and so on. And how are they connected, though? Why would that contradict the idea that a large part, anyhow, of our thinking is basically, like, habitually, you know, driven and is not really... I don't know what other term to use. You know,
willed,
a full,
consciously willed?
Yes, sure. But it's really kind of habit-driven. Why would the thing you mentioned like contradict that?
We have limited attention. We have to meter that out. That's very important. That if there is something going on, you can shift your attention and just go into this autopilot mode. If you need to expend attention, which is something that's precious, it takes a lot more, I guess, energy, if you will, and that's something that the brain will shift in its resources to whatever caused it to, you know, attention. If it's something like you just saw a bird flying at you or something, you know, maybe somebody fell down on the street and you're, you know, now heightened that awareness. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is really shifting rapidly, and they're doing it all the time. It's something you're not even really conscious of, and I think the alcohol inhibits that shifting of attention. I mean, that's the biggest thing that I think that it does, is that we're not, you know, if you've ever drank and then you find yourself just wandering and looking at something that you never would have paid attention to, or some little thing, or, you know, you're zoning out. You know, that's what it's really affecting. But to get back to your point that there's, you know, just purely mechanical, it's so much, it's the things are happening at the same time. You know, they're, even when something feels very mechanical, it may not be, because there's this combination. You know, you're receiving information back all the time, and there is all of these elements working concurrently. So to think of it in terms of a, you know, a simple either or situation from what the brain does, you know, I'm not sure that's like the correct way to think about it.
Okay,
I don't know if that's different, but
I don't know if it's dry like Tolstoy really makes it out to be. That was one of my criticisms of it as well. And I also have a hypothetical challenge as we're narrowing down in time here. When the thing about truly abstinent and no drinks ever will never be good in any situation, I found myself thinking of this hypothetical of a very healthy individual who there's certain times in that person's life where they do occasionally have a few drinks, and namely I'm thinking of maybe a business deal where you get together with somebody and you enjoy a cocktail and then you sign a big contract or like, because that happens all the time, and also like with my buddy who's going to be the best man, like let's say he has a speech to give in front of 100 people, 500 people, he doesn't know, is it okay for him to have a drink before to muster up this courage? Also, Jesus drank wine all the time. So just throwing that out there. And so I'm just wondering.
You're quoting some Miranda Lambert.
Yeah. So I think it's very clear that habitual drinking or, you know, moderate to extreme drinking is always harmful and never should be done. But it just seems to me like to abstain at all times, always, I just don't really buy into that it's very harmful. I mean, obviously, as Dr. Wygant said, like the body, it's always going to be affected in the carcinogen. There's no healthy amount of carcinogens. But I just think if there's a healthy individual who is not habitual and isn't relying on it to, let's say, forget something or to silence the critic, but is just doing it maybe to muster up some courage or to enjoy it for the taste with a meal, I just don't think that the negatives of that are as extreme as Tolstoy makes out. So that's the only challenge that I have as Tolstoy.
I have one or two comments on that real quick. The thing with alcohol is that what we find are there are subgroups. Some people can really tolerate it and they do okay. There are other groups where, particularly, there may be 10 to 50% of the cancers that they get are from alcohol. And if you're in that particular subgroup, you're vulnerable to that. You don't know who you are, so it's difficult to say there are other groups that may be resilient in the face of, you know, alcohol use. And when you pointed out, you know, using it for business deals, the body is very resilient. It can take an amount of abuse, you know, and some stress is good for the body, you know, so I won't characterize everything as negative. The context really does matter from what I've seen in certain drugs that would be harmful to us when done in, you know, religious ceremonies, Native American, they really contain it and they use it, but they have also a background. They're not running into the same problems that somebody who is on the street and using a lot of drugs. So I think the context really does matter, and how the expectations, even before you start drinking, can influence the outcome. The other thing that we forget about alcohol use and drug use in general is beyond the health problems that it can cause, that loss of attention can be deadly, even if it's just a few drinks. If you're out on the water and you happen to go in and you've been drinking, there's a good chance that you're going to drown because you're just not, you know, your arms and your legs don't move as well and you're not, you know, your balance. So drinking for somebody on a, like on a sail ship or a motorboat, that's a really bad combination. The levels of violence do increase too, but the violent accidents, they really increase when you're drinking. So that's the other reason why, you know, it has been really destructive in people's lives beyond just the regular health effects.
Sorry, I had myself on mute. But I guess I was going to say, just make sure that, my God, 90 seconds left. All right, then I'll just close with a joke, which is don't get married on a boat. That's it. Don't get married
with
on a boat.
With a champagne glass, yeah.
And, wow, there's only 90 seconds, so I'll just let that be the last word, and maybe we can come back and just devote the show to total abstinence or not, because I think that's the issue here. If you've been listening to Ethics Talk, thank you all of the callers who've called in. It's been really fun, and we'll be back next week. Good night.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.